Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting about the energy sector, covering a lot of what's going on with that continued rise in the oil price as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report, also writes the free report that is called Eye on Energy, which breaks down some of the fundamentals within the energy sector, supply, demand, inventories, all of those nuanced moves. Joseph, I think we have to start off with the just general oil price. Crude oil continues to rise as we're recording this, trading a little under $90 a barrel. This is a level that we haven't seen since 2014. And the fact of the matter was, after a little weakness at the tail end of last year, oil has rebounded quite strong and, again, has broken out to some multi-year highs. What, in your eyes, Joseph, do you think is driving this run higher? Because in all fairness, we've been chatting with you now over the last couple of months, and you have been warning your subscribers about potentially lower oil prices.
Yeah, the big thing for me is, you know, there's two issues. One, you have to look at the basic fundamentals, day-to-day supply and demand, and then you have to take into account war premium and issues of supply disruptions. So if you look at the basic day-to-day supply situation, you know, the EIA report that came out today showed the inventories for commercial crude stocks were up 2.4 million. They were supposed to be down 800,000. Motor gasoline was up 1.3 million. And you saw distillates up 2.3 million. So you had a big increase in a couple of components in the inventory side, when at this time of year you shouldn't be seeing it. So there's a slowdown in U.S. economic activity. Overall, the demand for gasoline is lower than it was pre-pandemic at this time of year in 2020. Jet fuel is much below because of the issue, as we know, with between 5G and shortages of staff for planes. So that side of it is where I would say to you, we should be in the $60 to $65 range for the price of oil. On the other hand, we're trading at record highs for the last, you know, for over 21 and 2022, $88, $89 a barrel. And to me, the difference in there is the war premium. And what the market is looking at is a concern that when or if, let's say if Ukraine is invaded by Russia in the coming weeks, and my guess is the window is the second week of February, number one, the ground will be firm enough for tank warfare, and also the mobilization will be finished by Russia to get the people in Belarus that they want to invade from the north. And at the same time, Russia and China are very good buddies, and Putin is going in for the opening of the Olympics, so he would then come back for after the opening, and then that would be the window. And he really only has about a month, you know, the month of February, because once you get into March and the warmer weather, then of course everything becomes mucky, and you know you're into the problems that you know the Germans had in World War II, where all of a sudden tank warfare didn't work and their offensive ended. So I think that we're looking at a window here for the invasion in the potential next few weeks. I think Russia only really plans to go after eastern Ukraine, which has a very high Russian population and a very high Russian number of people who speak Russian as their first language. And it's the industrial heartland that the Russians built over the decades and centuries. So I think that that's really the focus for them. And a land corridor to the Crimea is the end result of the takeover of those provinces or oblasts that lead from the Russian territory and all the way down to Crimea. So that to me is where the market is looking for a cutoff of oil supplies, where oil that's now sold, 20% or so of the oil consumed in Western Europe is from Russia. 40-41% of the natural gas consumed in Western Europe is from Russia. If that is cut off as part of the sanctions, on top of technology transfer issues, access to the SWIFT financial system, personal sanctions against everybody, including Putin, all of that stuff is on the table. But the one that the market is concerned about is the supplies of the raw materials, i.e. energy commodities, going from Russia into Western Europe. If those are cut off, that is the premium that's in the price. if something happens and they invade and the sanctions that come out are softer and are technology and personal sanctions and they don't touch the energy sector, then that's where the air is in the price of crude oil. And that, to me, is where the wild card will happen in the months ahead.
Well, Joseph, there's no doubt that the geopolitical risk is a factor. When we look, though, at the macro setup, I don't know that that would account for all of the price increase in oil and gas, because there's a lot of news out about just there being a capacity issue. I mean, just recently, I think as last week, there was stuff coming out about OPEC shrinking capacity and that a lot of countries may not be able to increase it much more. There's been the demands for them to pump more and they haven't even been able to get it up to the 400,000 metric. There's also the chronic underinvestment in the U.S. oil and gas because of ESG initiatives and a lot of the environmental initiatives. So don't you think that possibly the capacity issue could be another thing driving the prices higher?
Yeah, that is, you know, definitely part of the picture. But I'd point out that I agree with you that countries like Libya, Nigeria, Angola, and others don't have the ability because of a lack of spending to bring on more oil. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, UAE, and others have the ability to bring on 3 to 4 million barrels a day immediately if they wanted to, and they're just playing games. And if there was pressure by the United States, if there was something that happened in Western Europe with Russian fuels not getting into Western Europe, I think that the impact of no energy going into Europe from Russia would be not just a moderate recession, it would be a depression. And so you don't want to kill the golden goose. So you don't want countries in Europe and other places that import your oil, be it OPEC. So you're going to want to make sure that enough supplies come there that those economies don't implode. And that is the big risk if the oil becomes part of the game, if there is an invasion. And if there is no invasion, then there is enough supply. And the other thing you have to remember is the Federal Reserve has two mandates. One of the mandates is full employment. They've got there to 3.9%. Their second mandate is to rein in inflation. Inflation is running at 7% for the CPI, 10% for PPI. With these oil prices moving in the last month or so, that means both those numbers are going higher. Secondly, wage pressure is going up right across the board. If you listen to anybody from the companies in the retail sector, the food sector, they're all talking about $2-3 an hour wage increases, which are more than 10%. And the federal government itself, for federal employees, raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour, I believe, from 12. So all those numbers are being built into an inflation that was high in 21 and is going to be embedded in 22 and 23 by more and more. And because there's a shortage of workers because of the pandemic, because of in-house learning, are not part of the workforce. So you really can't get the labor participation rate up, which means you are at full employment, and that becomes a big problem. So the Fed is looking at it saying, look, we're at full employment. We got runaway inflation. What do we do? And they're saying we've got to slow the economy down. Now, Powell is not Paul Volcker. He's a lot more muted in how he does things, and he doesn't want to scare the market like the raise in interest rates that we saw during the late 1970s, early 80s. Because the biggest borrower right now are the governments, and they can't afford 100, 200 basis point increase in rates when they have most of their debt on the short maturity schedule, and that would mean massively higher deficits to pay those interests, and at the same time, they would be forced to maybe cut social programs. So all of that implies that they're going to be a very nuanced approach by the Federal Reserve, but tightening is going to happen, and a slowdown of the U.S. economy is likely. And my book is that this potentially from stagflation, we may be talking a moderate recession at best. And if this thing in Europe goes wild and gets out of hand, it could be a severe recession if all of a sudden the supplies from Russia don't reach Western Europe.
So, Joseph, before we leave the underlying, I guess, oil price commentary, what's your assessment of this volatility that we're seeing? Because it was not that long ago, January 20th, that oil was up at about $85, and then it dropped down to the low 80s, and then has rebounded again just in a matter of a week, really. And then it wasn't that long ago, December, dropped down as low as $62 a barrel, but then again, rebounded that quickly What's your assessment of this volatility that we're seeing in the oil sector?
Again, all of it, I think, relates to the concerns about Europe and, is sanctions against Russian exports of oil and natural gas to Western Europe part of the arsenal of tools to use against Russia if they invade Ukraine. So every time you see any nuance where I think the recent couple days, ordering by the U.S., U.K. and Canada of all of the families of employees in the embassies and consulates, I think, kind of made everything sound like it's getting imminent. Second, they also said to all citizens of those countries to leave the country because they see it as a battle zone coming. And then you saw the announcement of American troops being put on a readiness standard to go in. And then you've seen all the countries from Latvia, Lithuania sending, military equipment into the Ukraine, and Canada, of course, doing loans of money and product going in. Interestingly, France and Germany haven't stuck their neck out with military equipment. Germany has only sent in medical equipment. They, because they are so interdependent because they're the largest consumer of Russian energy, have only allowed medical equipment in because they, have so much industry ownership in Russia and Russia in turn in Germany that Germany is sensitive to anything outside of doing, medical support to Ukraine and no military support. So it's a divided Europe. The United States may be, verbally saying all the right things, but in my opinion, I think Biden is Neville Chamberlain and he's a paper tiger because the reality is if France and Germany don't play ball on tough sanctions, nothing is going to happen.
Well, Joseph, just in light of these higher prices, not just for oil, but in nat gas, how are you playing the sector now? Are you more interested in production companies? Do you like some of the more downstream companies or like oil services? Are you is there anybody left in the exploration side of things that's drilling new wells? What areas animate you right now, considering the backdrop we have?
Well, given my bearish view, I've held on to names that were natural gas focused. And we're going to start seeing, fourth quarter results starting in about 2 weeks. And I think the natural gas players are going to be reporting very strong results. And most of them are going to be focusing on retiring debt and then shareholder returns and maybe some growth. But if when you saw the cap announcement of the increase in spending in 2022 over 21, there was a lot of increase in the conventional business as well as in the heavy oil sand side. So we're going to be seeing significant new increases in investment, and that is going to be much more than the inflation. So there's going to be real volume growth in Canada. We're going to probably see Canadian volumes go from 5.5 million to 5.7 million. And we're probably going to see in the States, there are 11.6 today million barrels of oil. My guess is there'll be 12.5 million barrels of oil by the end of the year. So we're looking at, on both sides of the border, increased production simply because of the excess cash flows, the significant cash flows coming in, which will be first applied to improving balance sheets and then to some growth and then, of course, shareholder returns. And the stocks have done very well, the ones we've kept. But I won't make any new commitments. And in fact, if people are using margin and are overinvested, my view would be is this market is so euphoric that taking profits and having some cash reserves makes a lot of sense to me. The market enthusiasm by people who are bearish in March of 2020 has turned to market enthusiasm. And we're also seeing it in the futures and the options market, where just in the last few weeks, commodity funds, hedge funds have added double their positions and effectively added 500 million barrels of oil to their long positions. And option traders are not just buying $100 and $120 oil. One major important hedge fund has bought $200 December 2022 contracts. That's a bet that war breaks out in Europe and prices spike over $200. I don't buy that.
Well, just one more question about some of the oil producers in particular. A lot of them have had hedges in place. Some of that was forced on them because of the debt loads they carry. But as some of those hedges roll off and they have these higher prices, do you think there's any companies that have been held underwater a little bit because of their current production profile, but they're going to see a lot bigger margin spread as those hedges come off. Are you looking at any of those kind of companies?
Yeah, there's lots of companies that had hedge books that the fourth quarter still has some. And a lot of them have said they will not hedge in 2022. I think that is a severe mistake. If I'm right that there's $20 or $30 of air, you want to protect your CapEx program and your dividend. And you should be, you know, consistently doing 30 to 50% of your production hedged. If you go totally unhedged, you're gambling. Just like the companies were forced to put on, you know, 70, 80% hedges because the banks wanted to be protected that they were going to get paid back. Companies should do hedging to the degree that they need to protect their CapEx programs. The only ones maybe that don't are maybe companies with very long life reserves, which are more natural gas companies. Oil companies have shorter life reserves, and those that are debt-free. So if you're in a position where you're debt-free and you have a low-cost business structure, then maybe you can say, I don't need a hedge book. But on the other hand, if you do have a short RLI and you still have debts, having a hedge book makes sense, and taking advantage of these lofty prices makes sense.
All right, Joseph, great chatting with you again. Very interesting to see how the oil price is continuing to trend higher, but you are remaining with some of those more bearish calls, especially with that sort of air that you're saying is underneath the price right now. We'll see where this all goes, but again, oil prices have broken out to those multi-year highs, and is a turn coming? Well, we'll look into that, and we'll also follow up with you next month. So, Joseph, thanks again for your time today. I hope you have a great rest of your week, and I look forward to chatting with you in February.
Wonderful.